Well, it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon with you, Stan, to do an interview about your experience in the grain trade. Maybe we could start by you giving your name for the record, as they say, on the tape, and then describing how you came to work in the grain industry.
Well, basically,
your name.
My name is Stan Pelosky. I'm a resident of Thunder Bay. How I came to work in the grain trade is I working my way through school. I used to work at a garage in Kern River, and back this was in the 70s, and Bill Tranowski was the superintendent at the time, the late Bill Tranowski, and
at
United Grain Growers in Thunder Bay in the Kern River part. And lo and behold, he recognized, I guess, myself as a decent worker, so I got hired on as a student. And I liked the job very much, and I worked my way through university for 3 seasons. I would work from basically April till September and, you know, put money away for my tuition. And then when I graduated from university in 78, in my chosen field of education, there was very few jobs. I worked full-time. So basically, I worked 6 years at the elevators, probably 3 years full-time. So
about 1975 or so?
Yeah, 75 probably till 81. So
75 to 78, part-time, summertime.
Yeah, summertime, then, yeah, four or 5 months, and then full-time from 78 onwards.
Yes. Yeah. And what kind of work did you end up doing then during, maybe just stage by stage in this, as a student during the summertime?
Well, basically, to be quite honest, I had a taste of most of the, at the time, of course we're talking, you know, 30 years ago, or 30 plus years ago, I had a flavor for most of the jobs at the time at the elevator. I used to work in the car shed, basically unloading and loading cars. There was part of a kind of a cleanup crew that we used to clean up various things. I worked on all floors. I worked on the scale floor, working with the computerized equipment of loading and unloading. I worked on the distributing floor, which is basically moving the spouts to the various grains that are being distributed to the various bins in the elevator. I worked in the annex, which is moving the large equipment with the belts to put in the bins. I worked in the cleaner deck, which is the, most of the grain is cleaned and all the impurities in the grain and chaff and so removed. So I pretty well, in my time there, I had a flavor for, I think, pretty well all the jobs, outside of the specialized things like millwrights or, you know, things that you would need, you know, tickets for. I had a good taste of, all the major jobs in the elevator, I guess you can say.
How large was the workforce at this elevator, would you say?
At the time, the workforce, well, it would depend on the season. In the summer, of course, when it's busy time and the ship is open, I would say we had a workforce of probably 150 to 175 men. At the busy time, they were, you know, pretty well working around the clock in terms of cleaning and maintenance. So that was quite the size. It depends on the season. If it was there were layoffs in the winter, of course, with the shipping season not being available, then they would downsize and, you know, that sort of thing. But I think at the pinnacle, in the summer, probably between 150 and 175 at United Grain, based on around-the-clock work.
Yes. And during the 3 years of full-time work, were you employed through the whole winter, or was there...
I was very, very fortunate because in my time at the elevator, I only was laid off once. And that was for about 3 months because of the winter and so on, various conditions. But other than that, I worked pretty well year-round, so I was quite fortunate in that respect. And as I mentioned, the type of work you would do in the summer when it was busy and you had ships and that sort of thing was quite different from winter work, in which you would, do most of your loading with boxcars and tanker cars and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But during my time there, my full-time work, I was only laid off for about 3 months, and this was a winter. And of course, it would go by seniority in terms of the layoff, so yes, depending on the number of people that they would need. So,
sure.
Yeah.
And when you concluded your work there, you went to a teaching position?
Right, yeah. I was. I had gone to school as an educator, and I was quite happy at the elevators, to be quite honest. It was a good work. I enjoyed the lifestyle, but, when the opportunity came up for me to get my chosen profession, then I bid adieu to the elevators, and I guess it was July of latter part of July of 1981, and I went to Churchill, Manitoba, which, related, has a grain elevator there as well. And I met a few of the government employees that I worked with that actually were stationed up there for periods of time. And, you know, so although I left the grain elevator in the grain business, I still had some dealings with some of the government employees that I worked with. So
the social life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to run into them. You're working in the various parts of the elevator could enable us this afternoon to sort of walk around the elevator, figuratively speaking, and you could describe what happened at each point, what was distinctive about
I guess in a nutshell, I could kind of give you a little summation. As I mentioned, I haven't worked there for a long time, so in terms of the automation and the equipment, there's probably is massive changes. But basically at the elevator, you have, you know, the cars come in and they're unloaded in what's called the car shed. And basically what happens is there, you know, there's a conveyor system that puts them up into a large, huge bin that stores them. All the grain has to be weighed and graded, of course, because they have to know if it's a certain type of barley or wheat, and that's government inspection. And then from there, it's...
Spend some more time in that car shed. By this time, the grain was coming in hopper cars, mostly cars?
They were mostly box cars, but there were some hopper cars.
So it was mostly
box cars. I would say about 2/3, 1/3 were mostly the old box cars, and then the hopper cars were popular. And now I don't think I have very many.
We'll just worry about that time.
Sure,
that's your
for sure. Yeah.
Those are your observations.
Yeah.
How physical was the work of unloading that had to be done at that elevator?
Well, it wasn't really that physical. Most of it, like, everybody had a position to do. They had long cables that what they would do is they would hook up the cars, and then the person would operate the cables that they would actually pull them forward. Probably the most physical work was the person that was actually had a large bar that had actually opened the door, and sometimes they were very, very stiff with the box cars. But the actual work was done by what are called loaders. They would secure the boxcar into place, and they would have these huge bars that would come up and open the grain, and then they would kind of rock it back and forth with what are called large baffles.
So you had mechanical assistance
to loading? Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. I didn't operate that part, but there was different factors that you would do.
Were there specialists in the workforce that ran the... unloading equipment?
We're not really specialists, but there was like equipment that you would actually operate, you know, in securing the boss car and kind of lifting it up and down and putting baffles in so that it would be unloaded and so on.
Yeah.
Basically that was the
car.
But
there were some people who did that more than others.
For sure, well, yeah, and usually it was, I believe at the time it was a higher paying job and it was more of a specialized job because to be able to run the equipment and to, you know, manipulate a thousand ton box car up and down and back and forth in a safe environment, of course.
Hydraulic equipment.
And
so each car was unloaded by this equipment, just one car at a time.
And like I say, there was, I would say maybe a quarter at the time, a quarter of the cars were the large hopper cars that were unloaded by opening the bottom, like there was a bottom chute that they would come out. That would be a lot quicker and less physical as opposed to securing it and rocking it back and forth.
Were there two different arrangements on the floor of the car?
Yeah,
shed?
Basically they had what are called, they called them dumpers because they would dump the cars. They had three. Two were pretty well restricted to the old style car, the box car, and one was more for the new hopper cars, in which you had like a large gear and an opening underneath that you would open up.
Yeah, just poured out by gravity.
Yeah, just exactly. And
So the grain pours into the bins, which you were beginning to describe, underneath, and what happens then?
Well, basically what happens then is every boxcar that comes in, it has to be graded by the government staff, because the grading goes, of course, according to the different qualities of wheat and barley and so on, and they have to be graded depending on the impurities and the product of it. Once they designate it as whatever the grain may be, then it goes up to the scale floor, in which it's noted that is, you know, 2 red 13.5 or tough 3 utility, whatever the case may be, and then from there they would weigh it and ensure that there's so much of the grain. Then from there they would dictate to what's called the distributing floor. These gentlemen would move spouts that would put them in bins, and they would put them in various bins, and then it would be either loaded and cleaned right away or put into the annex to store to be cleaned for another time.
Sure. The grain that in each boxcar would be homogeneous. Each boxcar would have its own grain.
Yes.
And when you had the grain established and the grain was being dumped in bins, a mixing could take place in bins, grain from different cars, but it would always be the same grain
that went
into a bin.
Yeah, it
How
would.
Many bins did this necessitated an elevator?
Well, I mean... In the elevator I worked at, there was two annexes, the inshore and the outshore, and I'm not sure of the capacity, but you had some bins that were actually the grain was cleaned right away and went to the cleaner deck in which the grain was cleaned, and then it was sorted and then stored. If it couldn't be cleaned right away, it would have to be sent to the annex in larger bins that would store up to 16 boxcars of the same quality grain, and they would store it there and
then
had it in one huge bin.
Yep.
Part of a lot of times, too, and related to that, is that some of the bins had to be cleaned, and that was a physical job because you would actually have this equipment that people would be lowered down, feet down.
Let's clean a bin. You've done that, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, I've done
so
that.
So let's clean a bin.
Yeah.
It's empty of grain.
It's empty of grain, but what happens sometimes, depending on the quality of grain, like if it was something like a screenings or something that, it did happen by human error, you wouldn't want to mix different grains.
Of course not.
Because it's like, but anyway, so what would happen is sometimes they would have to clean the bins if it was like a screening or something that you would actually have to physically go down and clean the bin out in order to put another quality grain in it.
So you were lower down 96
feet. You were lower down 96 feet, and there was a crank system, and I wasn't down there a lot because I was a bigger person. Usually the lighter people would go down because it's
less
physical.
The little guys got the chance, eh?
Yeah, and you would go down and clean the bin, and then,
this was what, primarily sweeping it up?
Sweeping it up or actually shooting it down a chute onto a belt so that the bin would be clean. Sometimes...
just a matter of getting it all out.
Just like if
empty
you were
to the bottom.
Exactly. Just like if you were cleaning, you wanted to make sure that it was clean, and you would get either rakes or hose and push it down a chute. And sometimes, like I say, depending on the quality of grain and that, you'd have to clean them because you couldn't put a good quality grain onto that. It could cause havoc when you when you're shipping the grain and you have impurities that are more than the acceptable standards.
Because each of these bins would also be emptied later on, or the grain removed from it through the bottom.
Oh yeah,
onto the
and that's how it would be loaded to the boats, because basically if you had and what would happen is a ship would be coming in and they'd say, well, I need 20,000 tons of one red 12.5, and they would have a big accounting system with all the elevators and send them to the various ones that had that grain. And then from there, and again, these would have to be sampled as well, and then it would be brought up, and then it would be loaded onto the ships. And of course the grain trimmers, who aren't really elevator employees, but they're the ones responsible for the large telescopic circular items that would load the bins up and load the ships
down those chutes.
Yeah.
So we've been in the car shed. We've moved the grain up to the weighing and the cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in the cleaning process?
Well, basically in the cleaning process is that they have different machines, and there's different adjustments on the machine. And depending on the grain, be it wheat or durum or oats, would be more conducive to clean from various machines. And basically what would happen is that it would have to be cleaned, the impurities removed, the chaff and the dust, and more of the not-so-good qualities of the grain. Mm-hmm. And then what they would do is they would actually have to have samplers, and people would actually inspect it to make sure that it met the certain standards. And then it was stored, and it would sit there until either a boxcar or ideally a boat, because you can load a boat a lot quicker than you can boxcars because it's continuous. And then they would sell it to, either salties, which we call this as overseas and ocean-going vessels, or lakers that would go to various places in the country. So.
Right. And the you as an employee of grain growers in this elevator would get how close to the... to the loading of the ships, you'd be involved under the direction of the grain trimmers, I guess, in deciding.
Well, actually, the grain trimmers would actually be responsible for the loading. Mm-hmm. But like it was like a team effort. Like the people that would say work in the tunnels would be the lower part. They would open up the grain. You'd have the government staff that would grade it. You'd have the spout people that would put it on a certain bin. You'd have a gentleman that would move this machine. So there was a lot of people involved in various aspects of it, depending on the various job that you had at the time. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the most important jobs was the inspector, because he would have to okay the grain and make sure it was of good quality, because the prices of grain, at that time, if there was various impurities in it and that, the quality of the grain, it wouldn't be very good.
Right. And these inspectors are Canadian Grain Commission.
Right. The Canadian Grain, but we also have the elevator inspectors as well. The Grain Commission, they authorize, as a government, and they kind of sign their seal of approval, shall we say. But there's also inspectors within the elevator that would designate the grain as a various quality and that sort of thing. And there's that as well.
So it was UGG employees that were involved in the... primary designation of the...
Well, the UGG employees, but the ultimate authority was the Canadian Grain Commission.
Right.
For in-house things, like if we were just storing it in-house, then yes. But ultimately, when it was shipped, it was the Canadian Grain Commission that had the authority to say, this is good wheat or this is the quality that we're looking for. They had the ultimate authority, as it should be.
But remember how many company inspectors there would have been working at any one time?
Well, it's hard to say, but usually they had about a couple inspectors, and depending, if they're loading a boat, they would have two pretty well, and of course the Grain Commission would take their samples, and they would work in concert and that sort of thing. And of course you have various, like one job was a sampler. He actually had to go and take samples of the grain going to the boat, bring it, and they would look at it and you know, ensure that it was of the required quality.
I don't suppose UGG kept samples, stored samples in the elevator.
We had some samples that we would keep, and mostly they were for, my understanding was mostly for testing. Like people would get, you know, okay, what kind of grain is this and what, and looking at it. So it'd be used more of as a refresher or as a tool to help people to know about the various grains and the qualities and the amount of seeds that should be in it and so on. Because it was.
Stock of samples anywhere, it'd be the Grain Commission that would.
Great, yeah, they would have that. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they have to keep a sample for, and I don't know, and they would know better, but they would have to keep a sample, samples on hand of this grain and that sort of thing. So,
is part of the ultimate verification. Although I suppose the reality of the Canadian grain trade was that with the Grain Commission supervising the wheat board and established standards long ago, which people expect to always be met.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, if you're buying a good quality Durham to make, you know, to make a high quality of Seminola spaghetti, you wouldn't want, you know, a substandard product or that sort of thing. And that hence the, you know, the Grain Commission would be involved and, you know, that sort of thing. So
we've talked about the activity sort of generically, if you will. How many different kinds of grains did you work with?
Oh, there's lots of kinds. Like, I mean, for every type of wheat, there was at least, it would go by protein content. Like Run Red 14.5 would be 14.5 protein content. Two Red would be a lower quality grain. Utility would be a wet grain that would have to be dried. There's different kinds of barley. Barley that's more for feed. Barley that's more for bread. Some barley used for Clagas. Barley used more for hops of alcohol. I mean, there was Durum that was used for various types of spaghetti. There was rapeseed that was used for making of canola oil. So there was many, many different kinds. And within each of these grains, there was different grading of the grains within the grains. So it's almost like a flow chart. You have the top, and then you would have
I'm thinking of the species, if you will, first
of
all.
Yeah, there's many. And in fact with research over time, doing research and making it a better, more of a hybrid, more of a better quality. So it was always kind of an ongoing sort of a process. So. An aside, not really a joke, but an aside, but most of the inspectors I knew had to wear glasses because after so much time of looking, you know, it's very, I don't want to say tedious, but you're looking for various things in the grain, and it's, you know. So.
Yeah, the old magnifying glass.
Well.
Kids like to pick up and run around.
For sure, yeah.
What were the conditions in the elevators like by this time in terms of air quality?
Well, when I was there in the late 70s, they did have air filter systems, but depending on where you worked, some of them were good and some weren't as good. And I remember the one summer, I remember it well, I can't remember what summer it was, but it was late 70s, they were actually doing a revamping of it and they had very little, in terms of putting up these filters and so on, they had very little and a lot of times it was very poor. You know, the grain dust and that, and that would be very, you'd have to wear a mask a lot of times, and your mask would be, you know, quite dirty in that.
And you were encouraged to wear a mask?
Well, sure, yeah.
Was there anything else you were encouraged to
wear? Well, I mean, work safely. I mean, a lot of times we would get heck if we didn't have our hard hat on, rightly so, and safety boots, and, you know, and common sense. Like, you're not going to be working in an unsafe area not paying attention when, you know, grain cars are going by or heavy equipment's being operated and, you know, that sort of thing. A lot of safety is common sense.
It was a relatively safe workplace?
I would say yes. I mean, accidents happen, people get hurt. I mean, it's, you know, when you're working with industry and equipment, but, you know, when I was there, most of the people, or most of the time, you know, people worked in a safe environment and help each other and that sort of thing. But, I mean, human error, if you're not thinking sometime or you're not paying attention and you walk into a big, you know, pillar or something, I mean, you know, that's. More inattentive, so.
Are there any accidents that happened while you were there?
Trying to think. That was a while ago, but I can't remember any serious. There may be some people maybe hurt their back or something overexerting themselves, but I can't think of any, you know, life-threatening or people getting killed on the job because of unsafe practices. Mm-hmm. That's not saying it didn't happen, but in my time, I can't recall that.
Did you get any kind of sense you were flanked by Richardson's on one side,
wasn't it? Well, there was UGG, we had UGG, and there was SAS Pool 4, and then there was Manitoba Pool 1, I believe, that has been demolished, and I think Richardson's was the big orange one. That's how we knew that, because it kind of stuck out, like it was the orange one that was painted. So,
right. Now, did you have any kind of sense of what the other elevators, their workforces were like?
Not really. I mean, the thing is I think a lot of the commonalities in terms of the equipment and what they did were pretty similar. As far as the technology for various elevators, I would assume at the time it would be similar, but I would imagine, and this is just a kind of an educated guess, that the work day and the day if you worked at UGG or SAS Pool 4 or Richardson's was pretty similar in terms to what you would do. Mm-hmm.
There was another UGG elevator.
Yeah, it was called McCabe's Elevator M. We used to kid around and say you're going bowling because the big M, McCabe's. Big M bowl back then.
Mario's and McCabe's.
Yeah, but they had that. And that was enough. I didn't have the fortune or misfortune of working there, but some people, when they, depending on their seniority, they might have to go there and work for a short period of time in order to be able to work because of seniority and the number of employees needed for the various elevators.
Are you able to specify a bit more precisely your fortune or misfortune?
Well, I mean, it just depends. Like some people I know to McCabe's, they didn't like the working there, and some people did. So I guess it's a personal choice. It's like if you work at place A or place B.
Any sense of what the difference?
I don't know. I never worked there, but just in terms of the cleanliness, and just by going what I heard, that the UGG A house was a bigger house. It was a cleaner house.
The one you were in.
Yeah, the one I was, yeah.
But the other one hadn't been fully cleaned out.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, but these are all, you know, perceptions.
Sure. Sure.
You know, like we look there and two is four. I mean, you can't argue with that.
No, indeed. What about such other things as vermin around the place?
There had some pretty big rats there, to be quite honest. I mean, you know, like, and especially if they get wet. I mean, it was it's a natural feed for them. And a lot of times you would see, you know, mice and larger rats in the evening and that. Yeah. I think it'd be a common thing, but you're handling so much grain, and if it gets wet, and it's a good food for them, it's nice and easy. So, but I don't think it was rampant in any way, not that I can recall anyway.
No.
But I mean, it's a common thing. I mean, you know,
you didn't set out to kill them or anything.
No. But what I've been told is that if you're working in the dark area in the tunnels or something, don't corner a rat because they will show no mercy in order to escape. That's what I've heard. So if you corner it, get out of the way and
survive.
Let them escape. Yeah, survival, because they, you know.
The workers in all the elevators belong to what, Lodge 650 of the...
I believe, yeah. It's been a while, yeah. The grain handlers union.
Were you at all active in the union?
Not really. I was there for a short time. I actually went to a few meetings, and they would have meetings in terms of information sharing and so on. But in my short time, they're actually signed up to be involved with negotiations, but I never made it. They would usually go by seniority.
Sure.
Like I say, I was there but I enjoyed my time there. I really did. I enjoyed the work, enjoyed the camaraderie of various people, and I did enjoy my time there. I say that sincerely. So.
Yeah. Have we walked through every part of the elevator to which you worked?
Well, I think the thing is I mentioned the scale floor, and basically on the scale floor, it's, you know, the electronic weighing. The distributing floor is where I worked. That was a good job because it was physical. You're moving and that, and basically you move these large spouts onto the hole, like they would say, three receiver 27. So you'd move this big thing, and you'd have a walkie-talkie, and when you secured it, you would say three receiver 27, okay. They would okay it, and they would put the grain down the chute. The annex, if the grain had to be, you couldn't clean it right away, it had to be stored in the large bins, and the annex would be moving of these large conveyors, you know, over the bins, and you would store it there. The tunnels, I worked there a few times in terms of when boats are being loaded or boxcars, you go down and you would open up the various bins, and, you know, they would go up and be weighed and so on. So the elevator's big. I mean, you can see the size of the bins, but most of it's storage because there's, you know, floors that are working, but it's not everybody's working on every floor because, you have your basement, you have your tunnels, you have your cleaner deck, which is cleaning the grain.
Right.
You had your annex, you had your scale floor, and you had your distributing floor. So basically you had six working areas per se. And of course, you had millwrights looking after maintaining of equipment and replacing buckets that would transport the grains up and so on. So you had that sort of thing. And you had your electricians if there's any power, you know, problems there. And I remember one time, that Somebody said, well, the best thing the electricians can be doing is be sitting down doing nothing, because once you don't have any power, then you're in trouble.
Yes. So,
but yeah, it was a, you know, everybody had, you know, jobs to do and
sure.
that. And so.
Was there such a thing as a typical day in the elevators?
Or? Well, a typical day, yes. I mean, depending on where you worked, it was typical. Yeah. I mean, if you worked in the car
shed. Different kinds of typical days.
Yeah, different kinds. I mean, if you worked in the car shed and you were entrusted with certain things, you would unload the cars. I mean, if you worked the distributing floor, you would wait for your signal to put the spouts on the various bins. If you worked in the scale floor, you would, you know, man the receivers or the shippers and weigh the grain. So, you know, but when I say typical, it depends if you're loading a boat or if you're loading boxcars. Sometimes, unfortunately, you'd have problems and foul-ups, and that wouldn't be so typical. That wouldn't be good because, you know, through human error. But yeah, I think routine would be a better way as opposed to typical. Because if you worked in a certain floor, it was pretty routine. Because you did basically the same job. It may change somewhat, but, you know, that sort of thing. So, but
what size was the management force in an elevator?
Well, you had, I'm thinking back at UGG, there was a superintendent. There was, I think, a couple of superintendents. There was a... usually a management of three or four, basically shift bosses. But you also had like foremans, like on the, you know, on the
floor. A foreman in each area, I suppose?
Pretty well. Mostly on the cleaner deck because they worked in concert with the person. You had a foreman there. You had like a, and he was a non-union person.
Mm-hmm.
No, a union person, I should say. And then you had mostly non-unions that would be, you know, supervisors of various things and, you know, doing the scheduling and filling out reports and whatever else, right. you know, they did. Sort of thing. So, but
what kind of an employer was UGG?
You know, I've got no complaints, to be quite honest. I liked it. I think at the time we had a decent wage. I got along well with people. I mean, it's like anything. I think the thing is, if you put into something what you want to get out, or if you're fair and decent with people,
right.
you know, I had very few problems employee wise in terms of that. I mean, I did my job and respected people that did theirs and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was, I guess, I don't want to say a testament, that's not the right word, but for my 3 summers that I worked there, they called me back all the time, and I was one of the first
sure.
to come back, and it was a choice. I mean, you know, the thing is, I'm a student, and they know that I had a start and end date when I went back to school, but, I mean, I got along well with, you know, people like Ray Cosno, who's a fine man, he's aged, Bob Antoniak, I see Bob, and I kid with him all the time, and say, Bob, you're a fountain of youth, you're getting younger, and, you know, Bill Belanger, I mentioned, was a young superintendent, Robbie Hollingsworth. So I know a lot of these gentlemen personally, and I, you know, you're fair with them. And
sure.
I know some people, so-and-so is this or that or whatever, but...
yeah. Was there anything distinctive about the workforce as a whole in ethnic or other terms, or were they just kind of...
Well, yeah, I think the thing is as far as ethnicity goes, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of European, a lot of Ukrainian, you know, people, you know, we had, you know, in that respect, a lot of people from the old country, but good workers in that.
Which old country?
Well, I mean, there was Italians, there was Slovaks, there was Ukrainians, you know, East Europeans, I guess you could say.
So continental Europeans, Central Europeans, a lot of them.
So there was a kind of a mixture, and some of the fellows were funny because they knew their job, and if I could be humorous, they'd say, no good to know too much, because if you did, they'd ask you to do more, different jobs, but that was more of a joke than anything. But each of them, I mean, you got along well, and everybody had a job to do, and, you know, you knew your responsibilities, and it was well laid out, and you know, there was training involved, so it wasn't as if they had to do this, and you didn't have a kind of a clue. So, but no, they're fond memories, and I still remember, you know, a lot of the employees I used to work with and you know, shared a few laughs with and a few jokes, pure or otherwise, with, I guess you could say.
Any particular... beer parlor that was the
well, Bunny's was close by. It used to be called Bunny's. I don't know what it's called now, but it was close to the elevator.
Strip joint.
Yeah, well, and then the park one. We'd go up there and have a couple of beer. But,
yeah,
but there was a lot of things too with UGG when I was there. They had social activities, like they had like a curling bonspiel and they had a golf tournament and you know this sort of thing that they would try
company
to.
Company organized. Or
oh yeah, no. Well, company organized. I think it would organized by the workers, but the company would pony up the ante in terms of renting the curling ices or whatever the case may be. And you know, try to get people involved in the camaraderie and you know that sort of thing. And
So there was a social life for the...
Well, yeah, not every day. I mean, it wouldn't have, you know. But there would be events and, you know, fish derbies and, you know, things like this that would try to promote, you know, the camaraderie within the employees and that sort of thing. So.
There was a time when companies might have had hockey teams, but I guess by that was long gone by the late 70s.
Yeah, I can't recall them hockey teams at that time.
But a golf tournament.
Yeah, golf tournament. I remember curling, curling Bonsfields and that, and... And sometimes I think we even you know, got scrub baseball games on a Sunday or something like that. So just, you know, the social aspect.
None of this involved, let's say, the workers from Richardson or
not
Sask.
Too often. But I mean, people would socialize with other people. But it's like anything. Yeah. You can socialize with the people you work with or other people, so to speak. Yeah. But, yeah.
Well, we move to the what you might like to like people to know about the work that you did during these years. If you have the opportunity here to convey a sense of things or a memory of things.
Well,
to
I
people
think
who will listen to your words in years.
Well, I mean, the thing is I've been blessed with a good memory and also with a good work ethic, I believe, I can remember my first day working at the elevators. It was in April, and we were shoveling off the big dock area because there was a boat coming in the next day, and it seems like yesterday. I remember a lot of the people that I worked with and some of the, you know, the activities that we did, you know, in terms of the work, and I remember, you know, the jobs that I preferred, and I usually, you know, was able to do that, but, you know, any job was fine.
What did you prefer?
Well, I liked the distributing floor. It was good.
But I also like physical work, rerouting.
Yeah, rerouting, and you're moving, and you know, the cleaner deck was okay, but it was kind of loud, but I was working the scale. Like, I had many jobs, and I don't want to sound curt, but I believe, and you know, this is water under the bridge, but I believe that they might have had designs on me to be a management in some way or shape or form. I'm not sure of that, but I mean, I enjoyed it, and I knew most of the jobs, and the jobs that I did, I believe I did well and had a sound understanding and a, you know, strong work ethic. So I've got nothing but good memories, you know, about the elevators and, you know, my coworkers. And sometimes I follow up in terms of, you know, making mixes or not purposely or whatever.
Oh, of course not.
We're all human, but that's that. And
what did happen if?
Human error. And I remember one time I can tell you specifically, if you're busy and you put the spout in the wrong hole, you'd have a mixture of oats and wheat or something. Well, they'd have to clean it and, you know, sort it out on that. And
that could be done, of course, putting it through the cleaning.
Oh, yeah, but there'd be a process. It would be a delayed process. But, yeah. I mean, nobody falls up on purpose. And, and nobody would say, well, you did this, you're going to get 3 days off or something like that. You know, I mean, it wasn't like that. They, you know, you would know. And if you did follow up, at least I did, I felt badly. And, you know, but I mean, it's human error, it happens, and, life goes on, so to speak.
Yeah. What might surprise people most about the work that you did?
I'm really not sure. I mean, this was a long time ago. But I think a lot of in fact, to be quite honest, about 12 years ago, I, in my career as an educator, I think I was in Beardmore at the time, and I actually made arrangements to get a tour of the elevator, and they were busy, the bosses were, and I had permission, so I gave them a tour, and things had changed a little bit, but in terms of the premise of the various floors, and I give the kids a tour, and they asked me questions, and I was able to answer them, and, you know, that sort of thing, but...
This is almost about 20 years from the time when you started full-time, 78 to 98,
yeah.
And it hadn't changed that much.
No, and as far as the standards, and I couldn't speak to that, or the equipment and that sort of thing, but, you know, the basic premise in terms of this is a scale floor, this is a distributing floor, this is the annex, you know, there might have been minor changes, but the basic premise as to what happened in each of those places was, you know, was very similar, so.
What are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of? You know, I don't like to say proud of, but I remember when I guess a couple things to be proud of is, I guess, the fact that I was a good conscientious worker, and I think people spoke highly of me, but I guess probably the thing I was looking back now most proud of is Stan McKay, who was one of the big bosses of UGG, was a big boss man, so to speak, I guess you can say. But I remember when I was leaving the employ of United Grain, because to follow my career, I remember him saying, you know, you're a good man, Stan, if you ever need a job ever, you come and see me. And when he said that, I was pretty proud of that. Yeah. Proud of the fact of a good, honest day's work and enjoying my work. And
yeah.
that sort of thing. But so,
one of the questions in the basic questionnaire is whether you think that the work you did contributed to Canada's success as an international grain trader.
I don't know if I'd be that vain, but I mean, the thing is that it starts from the bottom, roots up. If you didn't have the grain elevators to be able to you know, the people to grain the grade and to send it off to people, yeah, but to say that I was responsible for saving starvation in China would be a far stretch. But
well, those guys were people doing that were in Vancouver.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
you were helping to feed Russians.
Well, there you go. Well, whatever. But
Slavic brothers and all that sort of thing.
But I mean, it's like any industry. I mean, you know, the primary industry. I mean, you know, it's, you know, and I know at the time, and I remember when going to school, the biggest port in Thunder Bay, the largest elevator in the world, and I kind of made reference to that here in terms of, you know, the grains going west and that sort of thing, and they're sinking a whole bunch of money into Churchill, and I've been to Churchill, and I know that the port itself is only available 3 months of the year because of the extreme conditions and so on, but,
yes,
you know, it is what it is. But, I remember the workforce, 15 to 1600, now there's precious few, and the elevators have closed down. And,
well, it seems to me that when Frank Mazur was supporting by running in 84, he talked about 1800 on the water.
Well, and Frank, I remember Frank, big man, he'd get up and when Frank talked, people listened because he was a big guy, but he would, you know, be the kind of the fire and brimstone, and let's, you know, I remember Frank well for sure.
Quite a guy.
Yeah.
The changes over the years, of course, it's a fairly short period of time. Did you see changes taking place while you were there?
You know, not really. In terms of changes, I mean, personnel changes, you know, they would hire people, people would move on, you know, people would retire. But as far as the actual changes, when I was there, there was more changes in terms of technology, in terms of having more of the hopper cars as opposed to the box cars. But I think that was just a natural change.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, I can't really think of any dramatic changes. There probably was, but none that I was aware of.
No, it's over a longer period of time, I'm sure, that one becomes aware. And, of course, over 30 years, let's say.
Well, for sure, yeah.
There was a lot of change over 30 years.
No doubt, yeah.
Were there challenges that you faced on the job?
Not really. I mean, the thing is, not really challenges, like nothing physical in terms of that, but just, you know, to be conscientious and do a good job. I mean... You know, like there wasn't a lot of pressure. I mean, pressure to do your job and to do it well. I mean, that's a challenge. But
and you were there in a sense through the near the towards the end of the heyday of the grain trade.
Because
it really did begin to change around 84, if you will, 83, 85, and so on.
Declined, in fact,
in the trade to the Atlantic.
Yeah, that was in my rearview mirror then because I was in my educational career. So
you were busy teaching. Well, I've got some other questions about your most vivid memories about your job. You never faced a rat in a blind alley or anything.
No. I'm, you know, vivid memories. I mean, good, fond memories. I mean, you know, nothing, you know, dramatic or anything like that. But, you know, good people, work with good people and kid around. I always have had a sense of humor. And, you know, if you're working for 8 hours, it's good. But if you can have a little fun in doing it, then it's even better,
sure,
so to speak. And that sort of thing. So.
Yeah. Is it important to preserve and share this part of Thunder Bay's history?
I think it is, but I think the thing is that I think it's important to preserve and share it, but part of the, you know, the generation thing, because, you know, it's maybe important to people that have passed on and people that are upcoming, but, you know, with the way society is in terms of the changes, it's good to kind of know, but it really, in light of the fact there's such a small workforce right now, you know, in terms of the number of people working at the elevators and that, it's... I don't want to say it's meaningful, but it's not maybe as relevant to some as it might be to others because of the smaller workforce and you know, that sort of thing. But I think, you know, the distinction of the you know, of the one time the largest port in the world and the largest elevators and contributing to the Canadian economy, I think that certainly is quite an accomplishment by the, you know, by the collective workers and the government at the time. You know,
yeah.
No question. So.
Yeah. And as the workforce declines, as the trade falls off, these memories become rarer, of course.
Oh, for sure.
As the workers. Yeah.
Can't say, well, I've been there, done that, because, you know, that sort of thing, so,
Well, we give Owen a chance to ask any question that he may have. I shouldn't say always, we've come to this to realize there's wisdom in having...
Stan, I just want to ask about the cleaning machines. How large would they be?
Can you
describe what they look like and their size?
Well, basically, the cleaning machines, there was different kinds, and they were tailored to various grains. Like, some were more for oats, and they were like a shaker machine that would shake, and some were just more large cylinders. And they can hold up to maybe two boxcars of grain, take maybe anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes to clean that grain, and they would have to be, of course, inspected and make sure. But you can also adjust them, you know, in terms of taking out more seeds or more oats or whatever the case may be. That's basically it. Like I say, there was there was different sections, and each of them were more for, like, some might be more for oats and some might be more for durum or grain, depending on, you know, on the kind of grain. And but every time that they, you know, there would be, they would take in, and they would be checked and ensure that they were clean, and then they were stored, and then, of course, when the ships come in, they would be, you know, graded again and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Was the UGGA the company's main elevator in Thunder Bay?
Yeah, yeah. They had UGGA A and M, like this, yeah. A house, and M was McCabe's.
Right.
But the one that I worked at was the bigger one. And then my understanding is later on down the road, McCabe's went to more computerized. There was very few. It was all more computerized as opposed to manual labor.
So they chose to upgrade that one.
Upgrade that.
With the equipment.
Yeah.
Why that happened.
I'm not sure. I don't know. And like I say, if you had, like, somebody like a Bill Belanger or a person that would be involved in that time as management, they might be able to glean more information about that for you. But I'm not sure.
Both of these elevators were served by what, CP Rail or?
Both, CP and CN. Yeah. They would have people would come in with, like, there would be yard masters for CN and CP,
yes.
And we would have both CN, mostly CN. And some CP, but depending on the day, and sometimes, a lot of times, it'd be availability of cars. Like, sometimes it'd be difficult to get cars, and, you know, with various, whatever the case may be. But
yeah.
They were both CN and CP
right.
served. Mostly CN, but depending on the day, there could be, you know, more CP than CN. So
one can't walk the tracks, at least not legally, you're not supposed
to.
It does become a temptation to walk the tracks to get a clearer sense of
exactly,
what goes where.
Yeah.
Driving out towards Roslyn Village the other day, and along Roslyn Road, of course, you get a sense of the blinds there and so on and so forth. Aerial, do it from the air.
Yeah.
Just one other question. How did you get your elevator work in the first place?
How did I get it?
Yeah.
Well, like I say, I worked at a garage in Kern River for a number of years. I could tell you more about that than that. But I worked there, and I was, I think I was in grade 13 or so, and I was going to university or maybe, and I was, looking for, like, the job I had was good, but I was looking for a decent paying job. And like I say, Bill Turnowski was the superintendent, Ray Cousineau was as well, and they knew, of me and a few of the other guys that worked at the garage, and I guess we applied, and they knew of our work ethic and got hired on, and that was 75, and and they would hire me back the next 2 or 3 years, early, and hire me back on, and then got on full time, got my seniority, and that.
Yeah.
So, that's basically it.
Just showed up to work one day.
Well, I think I had to apply, though. Applied, and I guess they started me, and of course I was keen and eager, and making a good buck, and paying my way through school as I would want to do. Mind you, my first year tuition, I tell people this, my first year tuition in 73 was $665.
Oh.
And my son graduated probably 4 years ago, and his was $48.50.
Yes,
so,
that's changed.
times have changed. So
the fact that it was as small as that still in 75 is an indication.
Yeah, 73 was $665, and then
I seem to remember about 15 years before that, tuition was $300 or something. Yeah, well, so I guess it had doubled in 15 years or a little more than that. Is there any question that comes to your mind that I haven't asked?
No, I think basically you hit most of the, the things that I probably would have said in terms of that. As far as the importance goes, I think the importance at one time was very important. Now it's not nearly, because most of the grain goes to the West Coast. It was a good stable environment, stable employment to work at. Like I say, the memories I have, the elevators are fond. I don't have, I have to go to work there, or I dreaded this or dreaded that. It was good. And the shift work, I didn't mind shift work at all. So it was, and back then in the day, there was three shifts. So you, if you weren't a night owl, you had no choice. Really, and that's the way it should be. But, I wish you well in terms of gleaning of information, in terms of your study and getting a perspective of, the green industry through, through the people that work there and other people that you may speak to. So.
You didn't carry any memorabilia away that you'd like to pass? So.
No, but I remember my dad, I would sometimes get a little bit of wheat, because, make wheat, and called it schnapps or something, some kind of grainy thing. So, but no, I didn't go and I didn't say this or whatever. But,
You said you had a poem.
Oh, yes. I could share this poem with you if you like.
by all means.
This is just
Shakespeare sonnets.
Well, I don't know about that. Actually, this is 12 lines. Sonnet has 14. Are you an English student or your history?
You're right. A sonnet has 14, but you wrote this morning.
Yeah.
In anticipation,
just like, you know, the Heinz Ketchup. But I have a penchant for writing of poems, but they have to be rhyming couplets, as you'll hear in a second. But they're heartfelt, but they also show, you know, my thoughts about it rather than just doing this. So anyway, this is called A Tribute to the Green Elevators, and this is just a few of my thoughts. Changes may come and changes may go in all walks of life. This is very much so. A once vital industry to our great port and city is now suffering, and it is a pity. The grain elevators that once dominated our brighter days now stand almost dormant in many ways. The days of 24-6 were common to many a sight. Is a far cry from their current labor plight. A world leader in the handling and movement of grain, Thunder Bay can no longer make this wonderful claim. The number of workers now number about 150. Thanks to you, thank you to these and many others for their efforts, labor, and legacy.
Thank you. Right. Well, thank you very much, Stan, for coming in today and sitting with us and talking about your part of your life in the grain trade.